Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I have a twist for you today. And, you know, there's a lot of questions that people have. We wonder about how the investment work really works. You know, the inside scoop, what's that about? What really goes on Wall Street? What about these traders that, you know, they go off and do all kinds of different things we hear about bubbling up in the news? Well, I've got a gentleman on the line. He is a former trader, salesman, trading desk manager, and he's an author. And he's written the book Rogue Traders, and it's recently released. And the gentleman's name is Scott Skirm, and he's on the line. Scott, welcome to the program.
Thank you, David. It's wonderful being here.
Well, it's a delight to have you. And this whole area is, I think it's really easy for people to kind of just brush it aside where everybody's so busy and they're focused on their own lives. But you've really taken a hard look at trading and what goes on and kind of leveraging your experience, which is wide and deep, as they say. You worked on Wall Street for over 22 years, Bank of Tokyo, ING, number of different firms, that well-respected firms, BA and MS in economics at Lehigh University, quoted all the time in the Wall Street Journal, written magazine articles, and published several books, including the latest Rogue Traders. So you come to us with all kinds of insight. What really goes on, Scott?
Well, I will tell you, I think one of the advantages I have at telling a Wall Street story or telling a story about trading and money made and money lost and bad investments is that I used to be an insider, and knowing how the banks work and how trading works and having traded myself for a number of years, it's a much more interesting and different perspective than somebody who's from outside the community writing the story. Somebody who's, let's say, in the media. So really what I could do in my stories is really give somebody an insider's view.
That's very good. Well, and I'm going to make sure they can get more information. The book is Rogue Traders. The website, Scott Skirm, and it's S-K-Y-R-M, scottskirm.com. Okay, so set us up, Scott. Give us the kind of what prompted you to write the book, and then kind of give us the overview of what you're trying to, what you did with the book and what people could expect to understand better.
Okay, well, you know, the beginning of the book was about a year and a half ago, and I was about halfway through, almost finished writing my previous book, which was called The Money News, John Corzine and the Collapse of MF Global.
Hmm.
So what I did in that book, I had a lot of insight as to how MF Global worked and where they lost money and how they stole their customer seg funds, where I felt like I had to be the person to write that book because I had so much great insight. Then, while I was writing that MF Global book, MF Global actually had a rogue trading incident.
Oh, boy.
And 2008, there was a guy named Evan Dooley who, and you know, you would be shocked at the compliance breakdown that happened at MF Global, you know, just 3 years before they went bankrupt. But Evan Dooley, on his laptop computer at night, logged into the MF Global system and started trading wheat futures contracts in the overnight session. And not only did he do it once, he did it twice, lost money both times. The second time he lost $141 million.
Whoa.
So that's a story in itself, and when I finished that chapter in the MF Global book, I kind of said to myself, wow, this was kind of a fun chapter. Here you have a man, you have a market, it was wheat futures, you have an institution, MF Global, you have a trading story, you also have a manipulation, a loss, a market story, and then, of course, you have the consequences and what happened after. And I started looking at all those pieces, and I said, boy, you know, telling a rogue trader story like this sounds pretty interesting. I wonder if anybody's written a book on rogue traders.
Hmm.
Now, there have been individual books, a lot of time, written by the rogue trader. So, for example, Nick Gleason is somewhat of the most famous with his book Rogue Trader, which was made into a movie. But no one had written a book kind of telling the stories of individual rogue traders. So that's where it came from.
Wow. Well, now, and that's the kind of, see, that's what I love about having a guest like you, Scott, is you know, you've got that insight that only can come from being on the inside. So you've got a lot that goes on, and so you in your book you go through and you really talk about, you know, these different stories or situations, and so there's so much we can go over. What's one of your favorite to share with our listeners?
Well, okay, so let me hit your second question, which I didn't get to before.
That's okay.
So with the book itself, I go through 7 different rogue traders.
Right.
Now, there's a lot of rogue traders out there. If you ever look up largest trading losses of all time on the internet, there's probably about 40 to 45 different names that come up. So there's been a lot of incidents. And if you add up all the money that's been lost by rogue traders over the past, say, 30 years, it's about $66.3 billion. So that's a big statistic. In my book, I'm basically recounting the stories of 7 different rogue traders. And the traders started, I start off in the 1980s, and there's a reason for that. and
the Wild Wild West.
Well, exactly. So the first story is about David Huter and Drysdale Securities. And that's somebody who I did meet when I was a child.
Really?
And he actually offered me a summer job when I met him. I had some, you know, a personal perspective on that story. But that story started because it was pretty much the dawn of regulation in the financial markets. It was the dawn of what they call the repo market. And this whole market that's the repo market that's basically used for banks to leverage themselves multiple times in the current market. It all kind of started there. So that was a great story to start. With the different stories, I have Nick Gleason, and that's the futures market happening in Singapore. I have Brian Hunter, who made a big play in natural gas, made a lot of money when there was when Hurricane Katrina and Rita hit, lost even more money the year after when no hurricanes hit, and that's just a real fun story. I have Jerome Curviel of Societe General Bank operating off out of Paris, and he was operating in European stock index futures. I have the first time someone told the story on the LIBOR scandal, which is incredibly offensive when you have someone like me go through all the regulatory filings, and literally take the quotes of what these guys were saying to themselves to rig the market. So with the book Rogue Traders, you have different markets, you have different people, you have different locations, and the reader is going to learn about all these different financial markets. They're going to get a history of Wall Street to some extent, a history of these different markets. But here's the main thing which I really like to tell people and why it's great for the individual investor. Because in this book, you learn from their mistakes, and you learn what not to do.
That is one of the key things I was going to ask is, you know, what can the investor learn from these stories? And really kind of related to that, even maybe before that, which I'm sure my listeners want me to ask you, so that's what I get to do here, Scott, is what there's got to be some commonality and or a line that runs through these different points in time and place, and
right.
it having to do with the people, the personalities, the situations. Could you kind of capture some of that for us? That, you know, what you see with these kind of across the spectrum.
Now I would say, now of course, you know, the standard response that's labeled on these traders is generally someone just slaps on the title of it's just excessive greed.
Right. Right. That's a little too easy, isn't it?
Simple.
Yeah.
And to some extent, if you're a Wall Street trader, you know, you're trying to make a lot of money, so you know that's certainly something that's out there. And you know, I'll let the reader decide that for themselves. But what I will say, what's very common with the rogue trading stories, and I'm already working on the second book, so I'm already working on more of those stories, is that a lot of these are regular people like you and me. Perhaps they might be a little bit better in math than we are. but they tend to be regular people who got to a point in their professional career where there was a fork in the road. So basically, they took a loss on something, and maybe it was natural gas, maybe it was mortgage-backed securities. They took a loss, and then there was a fork in the road. They could either go to their boss and say, by the way, I lost more money than I was supposed to. I'm sorry. I'll, you know, do what I can to, you know, to make it back. Or they've decided that they won't tell their boss, and they'll try to hide it in some way and make it back on their own. So basically, in, I would say, at 5 of the 7 stories, that's the case.
So they not only took, in your analogy of the fork in the road, they not only went down the wrong fork, but they picked up the fork as they went along and kept going.
Exactly. So yeah. They just dug themselves in a hole even deeper. You know, a lot of time, and actually, let me hit on that point a little bit about the what not to do.
Yeah.
And I've got a good story because back...
Well, let's do this. Let's just grab a quick break, Scott, and we'll come back and tell the story. Scott Skirmer is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, author of Rogue Traders. Website is scottskirm.com, S-K-Y-R-M. Be right back after this break.
What if in the time it takes to eat lunch, you could potentially strengthen your financial future? Would you invest 1 hour to plan stronger? If you spend just 1 hour with certified financial planner David Holland, you'll get simple, straightforward advice to help you plan stronger. And if you already have a financial plan, isn't it worth an hour to get a second opinion? There is no cost or obligation to meet with David. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com for more information.
And we are back with Scott Skirmer. I had to kind of grab a quick break there, Scott. Let's get back to the story you started to share.
Okay. And this is a great story. And it goes back to around 1991, 1992. It's basically when I was working at a bank. It was my first full-time job, and I had been an assistant on the trading desk long enough so that my boss came to me and said, Scott, we're going to give you your own trading account to basically trade the bank's money in a certain financial sector, and here are your risk limits. Here's, you know, the size of your position, and then I asked him. I said, well, how much do you expect me to make every month or every year? And he said to me, I expect you're probably going to lose money your first year.
How about that?
and I said to him, like, so you're giving me a trading account and you expect me to lose money? And he said basically that he expected me to make mistakes and put on all the wrong trades. And he said that the same wrong trades that he had put on when he first started trading. So basically, my first few months, he expected me to learn what not to do.
Okay.
And so, and I think that's, and it's interesting, I've had this conversation with people who've mentioned, oh, you know, when you're a professional gambler, that's one of the things you learn there too, is that you learn what bets not to place, because they're not good gambles.
So, you learn when to hold them, know when to fold them.
Yeah, something like that, exactly. Or when the odds are tilted too much in the house's favor, you know, something like that. So it's the same thing for Wall Street trading to some extent. And, of course, you know, you can back that up, you know, one step further, and it's the same thing for investing to some extent also. And that's when you're an investor, when you're buying and selling stocks, when you're bonds or whatever you're doing, is that there's things that you shouldn't do, and you learn those. So, for example, and a lot of people let their losses ride. You know, if they've got a great idea of some stock to buy and it goes against them, you know, what you're supposed to do is have a level where you cut your losses. If it drops, say, 10%, you get out of it, because you were wrong. And a lot of people cut their winnings and they let their losses run. You know, that's a great example. And there's more examples like that in the book, but that's a great commonality with a lot of the rogue traders, is that they ended up married to a certain trade. Mm. For example, Nick Leeson and Nikkei futures contracts. You know, as the Japanese Nikkei stock index was plummeting, he just kept buying more.
Wow. Doubling down to go down.
Exactly.
You know, what's interesting to me, Scott, you mentioned this before the break, is that, you know, you didn't really hear much about any of these rogue traders really before the 1980s. And then since then, of course, it seems to have exploded. At the same time, you know, regulation and supervision and oversight and prosecution and investigations have also increased. What do you think has driven that?
Well, I'll tell you what. Here's my theory.
Okay.
And I haven't really seen this written about, talked about before. So here's my theory on it.
Okay.
Let's go back 100 years. In 100 years, there was J.P. Morgan Bank. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they were a securities firm at the same time. But the bank was owned by all the partners in it. Now, when you got to around the 1930s, 1940s, 1950s, a lot of these Wall Street and bank partnerships started to incorporate. Because at that point, they decided that they didn't want to deal with the unlimited personal liability. So, but you still had a system there where the banks took conservative risks, because all your money was tied up where you worked. So in other words, if your bank, if your Wall Street investment firm went bankrupt, you just lost your retirement. I mean, it was over for you. You know, all your money was there. Once you retired, you got your money back, and you probably lived out a great retirement and left some money to your family. So then the system started changing a little bit in the 1960s, 1970s, because that's when a lot of those investment banks went from private companies to public companies. So, for example, Merrill Lynch, mm-hmm. Morgan Stanley,
right.
Prudential, it was Bache at the time. They all went public to some extent. So that changed the whole equation, because now the traders at these firms weren't playing with their own money anymore. They weren't risking their retirement money. They're risking somebody else's money.
And the downside to them is, well, you know, that's why they keep doubling down, because it's somebody else's money. And if they can turn it around and they can make a big fat profit for the bank or for their employer, then there can be all kinds of bonuses and more money. On the flip side, there's an obvious incentive to take risks then.
Yes, absolutely. And if you look at how the system changed in the 1980s, was that all of a sudden the traders were being very well compensated for the upside, but the downside was just their job.
How about that?
And then if you were a big-name trader on Wall Street and you lost your job after taking a large loss, you weren't shunned. You were hired somewhere else, because at some other place, they would say at another bank, well, this guy's a big name trader. Let's hire him. You know, he took a loss, but you know that happens sometimes. So the whole
and it wasn't our money. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. And the whole system got twisted around, so that as before, you know, people were rewarded for taking long term conservative risks, and then post 1980s, when these companies became public, they were rewarded for taking very large short term risks.
Mm-mm-mm.
And then now take it one step further. Then in the 1990s, especially late 1990s, all the global banks started coming in, European banks, Japanese banks. And then the system just got even worse, because then you had some trading manager in another continent trying to manage a trading business in New York. So the banks all became very difficult to manage, operating in global markets, with a lot of commercial bankers running the whole trading operation with not a lot of experience.
And with the technology and the systems in place, you know, extreme amounts of capital can move internationally Very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, and think the rogue trader losses in the 1980s were at most a couple hundred million dollars. In the post 2000s, rogue trader losses were $7 billion, $9 billion, $6
billion. Wow.
They just became astronomical. And it all goes back. There was actually one rogue trading incident in a German bank in 1974. But every single, you know, when I mentioned 40 to 45 rogue trading incidents, every single one has happened post-1982, except for the one in 1974.
Wow. If you're just joining us, Scott Skirm is our guest. He's written the book Rogue Traders, and we'll take a quick break. Come right back. I got a couple of really good questions for Scott. Stay right there.
Great.
Do you know how to get the most from Social Security? Don't let a simple mistake prevent you from receiving all the benefits you've earned. David Holland recently showed a retiring couple how they could get an extra $84,000 in Social Security benefits over their expected lifetime. Wow! Don't leave your money on the table. Call Holland Financial today for your one-on-one appointment. David can do a free analysis for you and show you the optimal age to start drawing Social Security and filing techniques to maximize your benefits. There is no cost or obligation. Call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back with Scott Skirm and the website, scottskirm.com, and it's SKYRM, if you're curious, scottskirm.com, and the book is available on amazon.com. Rogue Traders. Real quick, Scott, we got a couple minutes and a couple quick questions I want to make sure we get in. One, do you know off the top of your head what's been the largest rogue trade or loss?
Yes, I do. And it's a yes and a no. Sometimes there's a fine line.
Yeah.
Between a Wall Street trader taking a loss and calling him a rogue trader.
I got you.
And then actually, when we're done with this, I'm going to give you an interesting statistic, too. So, for example, Jerome Kurvial, whose story I told in my book, Rogue Traders, who's about to begin serving his 3-year prison sentence, he lost $7.2 billion.
Okay.
Now, you know, he was tried in court and convicted of being a rogue trader. Now, you also have a guy named Howard Hubler, who was at Morgan Stanley, who was credited with taking a $9 billion loss and during the financial crisis, and he was fired from his job for taking a loss. Now, you know, would you call him a rogue trader? Maybe not, because I don't think he went to the fork in the road and tried to hide his loss.
I see.
So you could say that he took a loss but didn't necessarily go rogue.
All right, I'm with you.
Here's a really interesting statistic, and it almost goes back to one of your questions at the beginning. So you'd ask me, you know, what type of commonality between rogue traders there is, and there is actually one thing that all rogue traders have in common. And should I tell you that one thing?
Absolutely. Got 30
seconds. They're all men.
Oh, now that is very interesting. That makes sense, because you know men yeah, they are rogues. You know, let's just be honest. Well, I've only got a few seconds left, real quick, and kind of maybe make it a yes or no. Is it possible that a rogue trade could occur that could really damage our financial system, or are we diverse enough to be insulated?
You know, I think that the rogue trading events generally damage the institution.
Okay.
Where they're operating.
All right.
Whether it brings down the hedge fund or damages the bank. But, you know, remember, too, in 2012, we still had the London Whale rogue trader.
That's right.
And that story is going to be in my next book.
All right.
So with all the new regulation, there was still an event just 2 years ago.
All right, Scott. Well, we'll have you back to talk about that book when you're ready. Scott Skirm is our guest. ScottSkirm.com, SKYRM. Scott, thanks for being on the program, and I'll encourage our listeners to take a look at Rogue Traders, and Amazon.com is a good place to check that out.
Great. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Scott.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.